Hi, I'm Selvi Ramalingam.
And I'm Ivy Adedugwe, and we're both your hosts on the Imperial Healthcare Business Podcast. Well, very welcome. Today, we'll be discussing about the COVID pandemic. As it stands today, there have been 68 million cases of COVID infection around the world. Around the world, 1.5 million people have died. Currently today, the death tally in the United States stands at 286,000 people. In the UK, it stands at 62,000 people. This is the scale of this pandemic and the havoc it's wreaked around the world. Today, we'll be discussing the COVID vaccine development with Dr. Nadine Raphael. She's an athlete faculty and professor at Emory University, where she is the principal investigator for the Moderna vaccine study at the Emory Hope Clinic. She's the interim director of the Hope Clinic unit, and she's also the Emory primary investigator for the vaccine treatment evaluation unit. So thank you very much for joining us today, Nadine. You're very welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Nadine, can you please tell us about the journey of making this vaccine?
Yes, absolutely. This has been quite an exciting one. So the outbreak started in China back in December 2019. And on January 10, 2020, China researcher had provided the sequencing of the virus. And really within a few days, based on prior knowledge from the Moderna company about how to make mRNA vaccine and prior collaboration with the Vaccine Research Center, that's the NIH intramural, they were able to really make the vaccine just within a few days. What they did is they used the genetic material to be able to code for a version of the spike protein. So that protein, that's what allows the virus to attach to our cells and then invade our body. And it took them just a few weeks to make sure that they're able to produce the product as far as clinical trial materials. And in around 62 days, they were able to introduce the vaccine for the first time in humans. So that was a participant in Seattle. And shortly after, 2 weeks later, Emory was involved, and we were also able to vaccinate the first person in Georgia here.
Wow, 62 days, amazing.
Yeah, so it's really an astonishing speed. I mean, if we look at other vaccine timeline, that typically takes 10 to 15 years. Probably the fastest we've done is Ebola within like 5 years. But to really have a vaccine that's now is applying for licensure along with another mRNA candidate within the span of a year is simply astonishing.
Yeah, that's truly amazing speed. So what would you say, apart from the speed of the delivery of the project, what was different to this clinical trial compared to other vaccine projects that you've worked on before?
Yeah, I mean, we had to do the trials in challenging conditions, right? I mean, the whole city was shut down at that point. We were trying to convince people, though, the mandate was to stay home and to quarantine, to come and then receive a first-in-human vaccine. So, I mean, clearly that was challenging. We also had to have the laboratory staff. We also have to have the clinical staff to make sure that the trial can happen. But, you know, what I've been blown away is the dedication of the faculty, of the staff, and our community members to really, you know, get us over the pandemic. And it had worked with this one and hopefully many other vaccine candidates.
Yeah, that's truly amazing. What would you say has been the highs of the project so far?
Yeah, it's really kind of like the, you know, going the above and beyond the attitude of Emory as an institution, Emory researcher, Emory staff, Emory faculty, but really that connection with the community. I mean, I remember when we started, for example, the phase 3 trial here at Emory on August 11. You know, we were planning to start in the morning. We couldn't. We just moved it to the afternoon. Everybody said yes. Everybody was so flexible. And then I remember, like, I was just going from room to room to introduce myself to the subject. Many of them, I actually seen them 10 years ago when they came and also volunteered for another pandemic. Back then, it was H1N1. It was really gratifying to see that we still had that connection, to see how people that were, you know, older female, they really want to give back. I mean, it was a personal risk that they took, but for them, the priority was to back us as a research unit and then to really find a preventive way against the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that's truly, truly special, because what you've just illustrated there was the trust that the community has in the scientific community to produce something of greater good, and they were willing to volunteer for that. So that's truly special, actually, to come back 10 years later.
No, and it was. And we had like so many moments like that that were really special. We also had a lot of, distrust from underrepresented minorities here in the U.S., but they still want to do it. They felt like there was action that was needed, though there are still so many unknowns. And the fact that they stepped forward was, in my mind, very heroic.
Yeah, no, truly.
Definitely.
Truly, so.
Yeah, that must not have been an easy decision. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time we ever have a genetic vaccine that's close to be approved by FDA. Can you please explain to our audience how it differs from the viral vectors and address some of the concerns they have because it's a new one?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So there are multiple platforms. I mean, the most common ones are the DNA RNA vaccine. The RNA are much more advanced than the DNA. And then typically it's the genetic material of a part of the virus that's being introduced. In that case, they're adding nanolipids. So actually we're able to push the mRNA within the cells. So it can use the human apparatus to be able to make that protein. So on any given day, we have probably like 5,000 mRNA that are present in our body to produce the different proteins and other substances that our body needs. So that's one of them. It's more like a post-it. It gets read, it gets produced, and then thrown away. And then what the body's trying to do is just only one specific protein out of 25 that this coronavirus will have. So in itself, it should not cause COVID. Another platform is the viral vector. So what happens is actually the way to get introduced is not the nanolipid, but they're using a viral vector where they would add the genetic material, and then it is still the spike protein, which we know now is very effective. It's 95% effective through the mRNA platform. So that is the way to kind of introduce the genetic material for our cells to be able to produce the spike protein. Other vaccines are the protein vaccines. So it's actually, instead of asking our body to produce the protein, so then our immune response will respond to it, we're actually providing the protein. That's a little bit more challenging because we have to isolate the protein, purify the protein, et cetera. So that's why this platform is a kind of behind compared to the genetic platforms. And there are other platforms that are not being used in the US, but used abroad, is the inactivated or the attenuated whole virus, which in itself could also be a very promising platform. That's like the oldest platform that had been used in vaccine to take the virus, to attenuate it, to kill it, and that will provide the basis of immunization.
So the viral vector is also a genetic material.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. Yes. And then again, most of the platform had used the spike protein, which was a good gamble, and it's proven to be efficacious.
Yeah. So I think that's the misunderstanding among people, that and maybe they don't realize that even though the way it is being delivered is different, but the basic mechanism is the same.
Yes, correct. I mean, to be able to produce those vaccines that fast and put them in clinical trials, avoiding isolation, purification of the protein was the way to go. And that's why they are ahead. I think an important point here is like the clinical trials hopefully should not stop. We need so many doses of vaccine. Actually, most of them are a two-dose regimen. So with 7 billion people, we need 14 billion doses. So for one manufacturer to be able to supply the global numbers of doses that's needed is impossible. So really, we still encourage people, if they can, to sign up for clinical trials as the vaccine availability is increasing.
Yeah, and you just slid right into the next question that I had, which was, there's been phenomenal international collaboration in terms of the COVID vaccines that have been made between all the pharmaceutical companies, one that has not been seen before, at least in our lifetime. Do you anticipate that this will continue with future drug trials and vaccine trials in the future?
I am an optimist, so I definitely hope it will continue. I think we have learned a lot from the pandemic. The greatest thing was how we can get together the best minds, in the world to really try to solve a global problem. And I really hope that things can get faster for infectious disease. I'm an infectious disease physician myself, either on the prevention side or the therapeutic sides for other infection as well. Yeah. So yes, I very much wish that this will continue beyond this pandemic.
Yeah, it's honestly one of the things that's blown me away about this whole pandemic, at least the one good thing that's come out of it. Do you think the Moderna will be supplying to developing countries as well?
I'm not sure. I think there have been talks on with Moderna and COVAX who are trying to determine how to best appropriate the doses of vaccines to the global population. I'm not sure I am fully aware of all the details, but again, ideally, we need to have multiple vaccines, so it could be for everybody.
Yeah, it's certainly been quite interesting to see how families have adjusted with the pandemic. And I think now that hopefully the vaccine is here and hopefully people will take it, it will hopefully reunite families that have been estranged because of...
definitely the hope. I cannot say it will happen tomorrow. Obviously, with the limited availability of doses, yeah. And I think the challenges with distribution and allocation.
Yeah.
Also, one thing is important to note, we don't know if the vaccine actually will decrease the amount of virus in the nose. What we know, it does protect against symptomatic disease. We know it protects against severe disease. But how much will it affect the transmission is yet to be determined. I mean, obviously, we're thrilled with the fact that the efficacy is so high, even for the viral vector as well. Just one more thing to determine is, as we're waiting for people to get the vaccine, as we're waiting to understand the impact on transmission and nasal carriage, people still have to do social distancing, wash their hands, and wear masks.
If I may add one question to that, how long do you think the clinical trial would go on to get better answers that would answer all the questions that we have in mind?
Yeah, so tomorrow there will be a final determination if Pfizer will receive the emergency use authorization in exactly 1 week. There will be also another determination for the Moderna product. I think a lot will depend on also what FDA will say. Obviously a lot of people on the clinical trials that half of them did not receive the vaccine. They would like to know what will happen to them. And us as investigators, I mean, we're obviously wanting them to get the vaccine that they could have gotten it outside a clinical trial. How will this happen? When will this happen? I mean, obviously it's just... is still to be determined, and a lot had to do with the upcoming meetings with the regulatory bodies.
Yeah. Talking about the distribution channels, like you said earlier, do you foresee a difficulty in the distribution of the vaccine? Obviously, there's a cold chain supply that's needed. Are you able to comment on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, those vaccines require really ultra cold temperature. They are stable, at least for Moderna, for up to a month, and then for Pfizer, for perhaps up to a week. They're gathering more stability data. So we are confident that perhaps the cold chain requirement will be not as strict, though they will be present. So definitely that will impact which vaccine will be used in which country, depending on how reliable the cold chain is in these countries. So that's a definite hurdle in implementation.
Yeah. Is there any particular way Moderna is recommending that companies, hospitals facilitate their cold storage? Is there something?
Yes. So there are clear guidelines on how long you can store at certain temperature. If you put it on room temperature, how long it will remain effective. So we do have, yes, clear guidance from the company on how to. We also, right now, we have multi-doses. So ideally, not to waste vaccine, we need to have multiple people vaccinated on the same day when we take that vial out. So what can we do now that the availability is so low? I mean, I think we're looking at least in the U.S. for guidance from CDC to determine better what are the priority groups. And then some logistical adjustment that we could do to optimize the numbers of doses that are available.
Okay. And just a brief question more on the business side of it. Are most of the vaccines produced on site at Emory, or is there like a pharmaceutical?
Yeah, no, they are produced like with the company or the contractors, etc. So none of it is actually made here at Emory. They require really high level of manufacturing practices to be able to be produced.
Okay.
Is the vaccine ready to go? Is the vaccine ready to be distributed in smaller towns?
That I'm not sure about. So right now it's actually being given to the different states. And the state will distribute them to the healthcare. So the healthcare part is, you know, either to imagine as far as like what, how to implement it. But then once we need to also start vaccinating within the community, will the healthcare system just be the only place to be able to provide the vaccine is yet to be determined. So there are just many things that are being planned right now for the implementation of a population-wide immunization. Again, once the doses are available in good numbers, billions is what we need here.
Exactly. So just coming back to the pharmaceutical companies who are going to mass produce these vaccines, what do you think of the IFPMA pledge that they made, where they're all going to work together, they're going to make sure it's affordable and accessible to everyone around the world? What do you think of that pledge?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This is so essential. I mean, in a time where we've seen, for example, COVID really also affecting the most vulnerable population, we really need to have prevention for the most vulnerable population that are more at risk for COVID. So again, any coalition, any bodies like COVAX is absolutely essential to make sure that the vaccines are distributed in a fair way.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And so you mentioned earlier that obviously there's going to be a slight delay in getting the vaccine to the end user, so people being vaccinated. In the meantime, what do people need to do to make sure they still protect themselves, protect their loved ones? Because the vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting the COVID infection.
Yeah, I think it's estimated right now that for the production capacity of mRNA, it's anywhere between 500 million to 1 billion doses a year. So again, doing the math, that would not be enough. And then, you know, it's not going to be like all the doses available just on January 1st. So there will be just a steady numbers of available doses that will be there. And then also there is a priority group. So a priority will be made to the healthcare worker to save the workforce in case there are additional surges of cases that will need to be taken care of. And then also the essential workers or the older people and then people at comorbidity, those are typically the patients that don't do as well when they get COVID. So what can we do? I mean, really the basic stuff that we have is just to wear the mask, to social distance, to wash hands. Life had been disrupted more than any other time we've ever lived. But it's okay. It's going to be a tough winter. And I think we all have to do the right thing to make sure that the numbers decrease and we protect the most vulnerable loved one.
So obviously now we have a limited number of doses. But going forward, do you think people who recovered from COVID get vaccinated?
Yes. So we don't know how long the immunity to natural infection lasts. So the recommendation are actually to go ahead and receive the vaccine, even if we had COVID in the past. What the CDC is recommending, if somebody had COVID within the past 90 days, it's way less likely that they will get it again. So they will be deprioritized. Let's say somebody who is working in a nursing home facility, they really need to be vaccinated so they can protect the most vulnerable. But let's assume this particular worker had COVID in the last 3 months, they will be deprioritized compared to somebody who had not been exposed. So the simple answer is independent if we had antibody for COVID or not, through natural infection, the recommendations are to receive the full dose of vaccines.
Like you mentioned before, so even though the vaccines are here, we should continue to wear masks and follow social distancing. But what do you think? How long is it going to take for us to see any semblance of normalcy?
It's a tough question, but I think next is we need to test the vaccine in kids. We need to test the vaccine in immunocompromised to a larger scale. We also need to test the vaccines in pregnant women. So if we are able to do that in a timely manner, and hopefully we can vaccinate the kids prior to the school year, then we could perhaps maybe think in another year that things will be possible again. How much we will go back to normal will really depend all as a citizen of the globe if we're gonna, you know, commit to getting the vaccine. Right? So if only let's assume, 10, 20% will get it, that will not be enough to really reduce the transmission. So I think a lot of effort had to be done about trying to continue the education, answering people's questions and fears. People think the vaccine testing was done in a warp speed manner, which is true, but there are things that were not shortcut as far as timing. So the safety testing in human trials was absolutely not shortcut. There were things that were done in parallel, like the human trial along with the animal modeling. They were done at the same time, that's true, but there were now no compromise as far as the duration of a follow-up for safety.
So now that we know that the vaccine is not going to prevent the infection, how do you think we are going to be able to achieve the herd immunity, which is going to get us there?
Right. So we don't know for sure if it will decrease the transmission. So they have been testing that was done on people that got infected and then follow actually their viral load over time. There is also a promise with the protein vaccine that they can actually induce a reduction of the viral load in the nose. And then, yes, we have to be able to get to a certain herd immunity level that will ensure protection. So I just think like the first part had not been fully answered. So I still have hopes that the vaccine could still decrease transmission. But then again, it has to be a collective effort of rolling up the sleeve and taking the shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So McKinsey published a report where they estimated that we need at least sort of about 60% herd immunity or uptake of the vaccine for us to achieve some kind of herd immunity. As a sort of final word, what would you say to the public, to anyone who has any doubts in their minds about whether to take the vaccine or not? What would you say to them to encourage them to participate and vaccinate themselves and vaccinate their families?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I really think education is important. And then, you know, the right source of education is important. So, you know, websites like the CDC websites, the Johns Hopkins, you know, turning on to experts in the fields, trying to really understand, trying to, you know, most of the sessions for ACIP or FDA are actually public sessions. So try to be involved. This is your life. This is your family that you need to take care of. I personally plan to take the vaccine. I personally encourage everybody I know to take the vaccine. I try to understand, you know, why are they hesitant and how can we help best address with the best available scientific information.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. That was excellent. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your thoughts and expertise with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being part of the podcast. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.